Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Think of it as wearing a down coat in 110-degree weather, and that's what you've got. Their little bodies are covered with feathers. So most chickens do quite well in the winter until it gets, you know, to be below zero.
Backyard chicken expert Jana Wilson is back for the third and final installment of our series discussing the ins and outs of raising chickens. Tom Barrich and Alicia Croft join her to talk about preparing their birds for the upcoming winter months. Then we visit the Big Red Beer Fest, where local microbrews share a showroom floor with the likes of Miller and Coors. And then in the kitchen, two adult recipes, one for a martini using garden fresh verbena, and another for a drunken watermelon fruit bowl. That's a fun one. Stay with us. Welcome to Mia Partlow, who brings us the food news headlines at the top of every show. What do you have for us?
Annie, three stories this week. Raw milk advocates are celebrating after what many are calling their first major legal victory. Minnesota farmer Alvin Schlingen was found not guilty of three misdemeanor counts of selling unpasteurized milk. Schlingen doesn't produce the milk himself. He runs the Freedom Farms Co-op, a private club with 130 members who buy various farm products, including raw milk from an Amish farm. In a statement, a spokesperson for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture said the organization strongly disagrees with the ruling and that, quote, many children and adults have gotten dangerously sick from consuming raw milk, unquote. Schlingen says no illnesses have been reported from the raw milk he distributes. A recent peanut butter recall has been expanded to include all almond butter and peanut butter products produced at Sunland Incorporated in New Mexico. The products may be contaminated with a rare strain of salmonella that has caused at least 30 illnesses in 19 states. Prior to Sunland's massive recall, Trader Joe's issued a recall of its Valencia Creamy Salted Peanut Butter after a Minnesota consumer reported eating it in the week before falling ill. And the latest GMO news comes from Russia. On Tuesday, the country suspended imports of Monsanto's genetically modified corn following a French study that alleges the crop causes cancer. In the study, rats that were fed the GM corn over a two-year period developed more tumors and other severe diseases than a test group fed with regular corn. In response to the finding, Monsanto released a statement saying, quote, it doesn't meet minimum acceptable standards for this type of scientific research, unquote. Get more news updates throughout the week by following us on Twitter and liking us on Facebook. Just search for Earth Eats.
That's right. Currently, we're talking about superfoods on Twitter. Registered dietitian Sharon Palmer will be answering your questions. Join the conversation by searching for Earth Eats. Mia Partlow, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Beyond the headlines of this year's prolonged drought, a story is emerging on the advances being made to alleviate harm to food production in the future. Since man cannot control the weather, agri-scientists have crossed a new frontier, creating hybrid corn that might still produce under the driest conditions. Reporting for Harvest Public Media, Rick Fredrickson says this summer's parched conditions are providing an ideal test.
The subpar corn harvest of 2012 is coming in early after the worst growing conditions in more than two decades.
We've been really dry all summer. I talked to an older gentleman some time ago that said that he had taken 47 crops off of his farm, and this was about the worst that he'd ever seen it.
Bill Simmons is combining 1,300 acres of corn on the Klan farm outside Atlantic, Iowa. Multiple varieties were planted, but one field turned out to be especially interesting, a 300-acre section devoted to Aquamax, a new drought-resistant product from DuPont Pioneer.
Well, it's doing really well for us, I mean, all things considered. What I've been in so far, we're running about 50 bushel better in the Aquamax corn.
Simmons expects to plant more Aquamax in 2013. Pioneer's drought-resistant lineup was the first to be widely available. 2 million acres were planted across the Corn Belt this year. Major competitors are also out with their own anti-drought varieties. Syngenta's Artesian is wrapping up trials on 800 farms, and Monsanto's Drought Guard is being tested by 250 growers, mostly in Kansas and Nebraska. While early signs are promising, experts say it's too soon to celebrate. Chad Hart is a grain marketing specialist at Iowa State University.
I would say we do need to look at this fairly cautiously as looking at the impact here. Sometimes what we find is that we try out something, it works in the lab, but when we go out into the field, conditions are not the same. Things look good so far, but the proof is in the yield at the end of the year.
Pioneer has been studying drought-resilient corn since the 1950s. At its test farm in Johnston, Iowa, parent company DuPont has spent much of its billion-dollar research budget developing the new hybrids. The company says drought-fighting traits in Aquamax are native to corn, so are not genetically modified. Pioneer agronomist Greg Luce says advances in gene mapping made it possible.
We now can map the corn plant, and we can identify genes that have a positive influence on corn under drought. And so what we do is we pre-select hybrid lines that will contain this set of genes that are positive for their effects on drought.
There's a lot at stake in this new hybrid revolution, from global warming implications to feeding the world. ISU professor Chad Hart.
When you look back over the past 60 years here in Iowa looking at corn and soybeans, nearly half the time, the reason we lose a crop is because of a drought or very dry conditions. So if we can breed the crop to be tolerant of those conditions, to still maintain that yield, it is a game changer then, if we can pull it off.
Pioneer Business Director Todd Fraser expects its new designer corn will be a key option as farmers wonder if the dry weather pattern might extend into another growing season.
Yes, we're getting very good feedback on Aquamax hybrids this year. The future of Aquamax is definitely expansion. We'll see a significant increase next year for 2013 planting in Aquamax hybrids, and we've just launched Aquamax in Europe as well.
According to Fraser, studies show a yield advantage of at least 7% for these new drought-busting varieties. But he says they still need water. They're not a cactus. Iowa Agriculture Secretary Bill Northey says this year's drought has been the best test possible for the newly engineered seed corn.
All farmers are interested in it. Obviously, after this year, we're really interested in it. But it still has to be in its right place. We don't expect a drought every year. We do probably expect some period of dry weather. And at the end of the day, it's going to be how does it yield compared to other crops.
As summer winds down on the most widespread drought in more than half a century, farmers and the seed companies are anxiously monitoring the harvest for a judgment on the new drought-resistant technology. Growers want proof that it works. The agribusiness giants want validation that their massive investments will pay off. Near Atlantic, I'm Rick Fredrickson for Harvest Public Media.
Listen to and read more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Backyard chicken farmers are transitioning from what was an incredibly hot summer to now cooler temperatures in the fall, and then soon enough they could be experiencing snowy conditions through February or March. Our three backyard chicken farmers have been there before, raising birds throughout southern Indiana's unpredictable seasons. In part three of our discussion, Jana Wilson, Alicia Kropf, and Tom Barrich talk about how they coped during the summer and what they plan to do to prepare their birds for the winter. One thing Barrich is noticing with his birds is that they aren't laying as many eggs these days as they were last month. As he and then Wilson explain, that doesn't really have anything to do with the changing temperatures.
It's not really a weather thing. It's a light thing.
Okay.
So you will get more eggs when there's more light out.
It's something triggers in their brain, the release of the eggs. It's the amount of light that they get during
the
day.
Yeah, the amount of light they get during the day.
Will trigger the fertility in the males and the eggs releasing, which is also fertility in the females.
Uh-huh. Right. So you, like commercial egg operations, keep lights on to basically never – I think of it – maybe I'm feeling a little bit too humane, but I think of it as they never let the chickens have a break. Like they keep lights on year-round and
right.
The chickens just lay. Our chickens lay pretty much year-round, but egg production tapers off greatly.
Ours too.
during the winter months. And then poof, it goes back up in the spring and we're all like, hooray, quiche.
Yeah.
but there's also another cyclical issue with the, especially the females, but the males as well, is in the fall when light is reducing, they also start losing their feathers.
Yeah.
And that's called molting.
Molting.
And one reason that their egg production reduces is because they're losing their old feathers and they're growing in new feathers. And that takes a lot of energy, a lot of protein. And so their bodies are gearing up to grow new glossy feathers that will keep them warm in the winter. So that's another reason why their egg production generally drops off.
Mm-hmm. I had one Twitter follower say she thinks her hens stop laying because of the heat, and she's wondering when they're going to start laying again. How would you guys respond to that?
I think that happens. I think chickens are prone to stress.
Yeah.
They can be prone to stress, and heat could affect them, especially depending on the type of bird. There are some birds that weather heat better during that heat spell this summer, that horrible 2 weeks that was 110 degrees or something. We moved all our birds into our basement in our house.
Wow.
Our basement opens to the backyard. It's a garage door, but it'd be an easy 15 to 20 degrees cooler in there. And it was kind of annoying to like every day, but we only had five. You know, so we could do that.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that.
What did you do in those hot days?
Well, I live in the woods mostly, so I had a lot of shade. But this is interesting. I discovered that some of my birds were interested. I have large feeding pans, those black plastic pans with maybe 4-inch sides. I was putting out extra pans of water in my different pens. I have like five different pens. I've separated them. And I came home one day and saw a bunch of my birds standing in the water.
Hmm.
The chickens do not like to get wet, and it actually is not good to get them wet. But they went and stood in the water, and that was a way of cooling off for them. But, I mean, other than that, there's just not a lot you can do. You can try fans if you're in a place where your chickens can get air. But
some people I know would buy big bags of ice and just put, like, dump the bag of ice in their coop, and chickens might sit on it or
they
something,
might
you know.
Go near it. Mm-hmm. Actually, in the winter, when it was really, really hot, I put frozen water bottles in several of my coops at night because I felt so bad for the birds. The coops were really hot.
Mm-hmm.
That was my chicken air conditioning. But they liked it. They liked it, and they went into their coops because before that I was having a problem of my birds didn't want to go in at night,
right.
And so they would try to go roost on top of the coop.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, it's either, you know, be too hot or be dead. So
with the water in mind, even though you – obviously your chickens need to have plenty of fresh water, but it's not a bad thing during the really hot days to switch that water out because it gets
good
to be
point.
Like it gets to be tea by the middle of the
right.
afternoon.
It does, yeah. Good
so
point.
Just put especially in more cold water.
Metal waters, it's, it gets hot.
My birds actually take more dust baths in the summer. In fact, I would put out trays of water thinking they might take baths, but they really, really much prefer to dig their own hole in the ground and roll around in it, and that's where they would sort of wait until the sun went down.
So they have their own coping mechanism.
They have their own coping mechanism, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people had questions about keeping their birds safe and happy when there's snow on the ground. So let's talk about that. Freezing temperatures, what do you do to keep your birds warm?
Most people are really worried about the winter, but what we've just been talking about this summer is a lot harder
much
on
worse.
Chickens
really?
Than the winter.
Yeah.
Did you lose birds? We lost one who just dropped dead of the heat.
I did
really?
Not.
Yeah,
think of it as wearing a down coat in 110-degree weather, and that's what you've got. Their little bodies are covered with feathers. So most chickens do quite well in the winter until it gets, you know, to be below zero. The best thing you can do for a chicken in the wintertime is keep water, a source of water that's not frozen, and keep their coops dry. Humidity and wetness and dampness is much harder on the chickens than the cold weather.
Then
my chickens are outside for the most part the entire winter.
Do you change their diet at all for the winter?
I will give them a little more corn.
Yeah, same here.
Because corn is carbohydrates and it's, you know, they burn it quicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like carbo loading.
Right.
It's like carbo loading for chickens. So I do give them a little more corn. They eat more, I think, sometimes in the winter than they do in the summer. So I make sure they always have plenty of food.
You touched on a really good point, and it's all over the chicken forums, some of the online ones, is that in winter people get very concerned about their birds being cold, and so they will completely close their coop up and ventilation. Like a chicken does much better in a colder coop with lots of ventilation than letting
–
because they're very watery. You know, they don't pee. They have this watery poop. They take in a lot of water during the day, and you put them in there, and that's just a hotbed for disease. One of the things we always talk about with my girls is that chickens are birds, right? And they have this kind of lizard-like connection to dinosaurs and stuff. And I don't know exactly how scientifically true this is. But we may have read it somewhere. But their body temperature changes how they regulate it with the seasons. So, for example, if you heat your coop, right, and it's the middle of winter and suddenly your electric goes out and it's not heated anymore, you have a higher chance of all your birds dying mm-hmm. because they haven't – they're regulated their body temperature to acclimatize. So it's much better to have a dry space, yes. like Jenna was talking about, that they can get into for shelter and let their body temperatures fluctuate with right. the cold. We've never lost a bird to cold.
No.
Actually,
I have not.
But we have to heat.
Yeah, me neither.
Now, I will say, I raise a bird. It's from the Mediterranean, the Sicilian buttercups. They have very large combs. I have had problems with frostbite on my males. They have those very large combs. In the summer, it's fabulous for releasing heat. But in the wintertime, you have to be – I, on occasion, I will bring in my males to a shed that does have heat to keep the combs from being frostbitten because right. that can cause all kinds of other problems. Mm-hmm. And I will say putting Vaseline on the comb does nothing. Nothing.
Okay.
I've never found it to be helpful.
My daughter will go out and put Vaseline on the Orpington. I don't know if it's ever helped. She's never had frostbite, but she does go out every winter and do that to her comb.
Here's the thing. She's out there massaging. That's a piece. It's a skin with the blood flowing through it. It's probably helping that. And also, you're out there looking at your birds. And I think that's what's really important in the winter and the summer is to spend time with your birds. You don't have to have a fancy coop, but if you are aware of how healthy your birds are and
– just socializing with your birds in general is a good thing too.
So. How can you not though? I mean that was our big surprise I think with birds is my daughter wanted them and we all fell in love with them. We just go out there. They just make me happy.
Me too.
To see them kind of doing their thing. Yep.
Yes, chickens have personalities.
Totally.
They do.
Absolutely. Yes, they do.
Wow. Yes.
It's all about the chicken love, really.
It's like
the end
of
the day. It's
like dogs. Different breeds have different personalities.
Mm-hmm. And there are individuals that sometimes you'll run into a jerk every now and then. Just like people.
Just like people. That's right.
We've got time for one more question. Looks like this goes out to all the people out there who want to start raising chickens for the first time. You guys have had a lot of experience with it. Give them one tip. Tom, we'll start with you.
Okay. Find somebody who already has chickens and start asking questions. I think you'll find it's probably a little bit easier than you may think. You probably won't have to do as much research as you were expecting, but just word of mouth advice is better than anything else.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I second that. I'll add read. Research and read and don't just jump in without really knowing what you're doing because you make a lot of mistakes. We all do even when we read. Mm. But you don't want to have that at your chicken's life. So do a lot of research too.
One piece of advice would be if you are at all interested in it, just take the plunge and know that you're going to lose some birds on the way, which may sound callous, but it's just going to happen. Chicks just drop dead. You can look at them and one of them falls over and you're like, huh.
Yeah.
And just know that up front and go forth.
Alicia Kropf, Jana Wilson, and Tom Barich, thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
That was fun.
Yeah, totally.
You can hear our entire roundtable discussion about raising chickens in your backyard on our website. In part one, they discuss how chickens can help and hurt a garden. And in part two, they talk about which predators cause the most trouble for their flocks. Find it all at eartheats.org. Coming up, Chef Daniel Orr plays with his food.
This is actually from our farm down in Gibson County. This one was shaped perfectly to do a whale. So I'm going to show you guys how to carve a little fruit bowl out of a watermelon.
This recipe will be especially appealing to all you crafty foodies out there. Stay with us for that.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh local organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop, and Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX.
Tonight in the bar alone I'm sitting, apart from the laughter and the cheer, while scenes from the past rise before me, just watching the bubble.
Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. For 2 days in the fall, the Bloomington Convention Center transforms into a beer lover's paradise. The Big Red Beer Fest offers samples of over 300 beers from around the world. Small Indiana breweries are represented, but so are gigantic mega breweries. I stopped by last year's Big Red Beer Fest and brought back this audio postcard.
See, we've got Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. We got the Sun King guys from Indianapolis, Pyramid Breweries, Magic Hat. And then we've got Keystone Light and Heineken and Amstel Light. So it's a little bit of everything, not just local craft breweries, but the big guys too.
Okay, so on the table right here, what's your favorite?
Miller Lite's my favorite. I like it because it's made with corn, and so the hangover is not as bad the next day.
Hard cider. How you doing?
Cool.
We sample Crispin Cider Company. It's out of Colfax, California. It's an all-natural cider.
Do you know where you get your fruit?
Our apples are sourced from southern Washington, and all our pears are sourced from southern Oregon.
Can I sample the pear?
Absolutely,
cider?
Yeah.
Do you guys want to taste some of this?
Yes.
Cheers. Like this one, and I'm not a cider fan.
Oh, really? I love it. I want to live at this booth right now.
What do you think?
I love that it's not super sweet, and you can just taste the apple flavor without all of the sugar.
So I'm looking at Corona right here. Tell me something I don't know about Corona.
About Corona? Well, Corona's the number one imported beer in the U.S., but actually, something you probably don't know is Modelo Especial is the number 3 imported beer in the U.S., right behind Heineken. Most people don't know about Modelo Especial. It's brewed with chocolate malt.
Has a clean finish, like not traditional to what a dark usually is, and the chocolate malt gives it a kind of a sweeter finish to it.
We're out of South Bend, Four Horsemen Brewing Company.
So I'm a big Indiana beer drinker, but I don't know your beer.
Because we're new.
Tell me what kind of beers you're serving today.
Actually, we're serving for the first time to the general public our Headless Horseman Pumpkin Ale.
Fitting for the time of year.
Very fitting. Our local favorite right now, being as young as we are, is the Irish Red. And then on the other end down there is a raspberry ale, which we came upon by accident. We're actually trying to do Lambic, and we overhopped it. And it turned into a beautiful, mild raspberry ale.
A happy mistake.
A very happy mistake. We'll take them.
The 20th annual Big Red Beer Fest takes place on Thursday and Friday, October 4th and 5th at 6 p.m. at the Bloomington Convention Center. See photos from last year on our Flickr page. Just search for Earth Eats. If hard liquor is more your style, these two recipes are for you. Chef Daniel Orr made a stop at his garden before heading into the kitchen. First, he's mixing up a martini. What's in your hand there?
This is some verbena. Smells very pledge-like.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take some of the verbena, and we're going to muddle it. And muddling just means taking a wooden stick and pounding the heck out of it.
You're releasing the oils when you do that?
Right. Breaking up the leaves a little bit. Okay. Then what we're going to do is add a shot of Indiana vodka. It's made right here in Hoosier Land. We've got some Galliano, which is an Italian liqueur. Has a little bit of an almondy aroma to it. We're going to dry that out because the Galliano is a little bit sweet, so we're going to add just a little bit of vermouth and a touch of orange bitters. All right, we're going to put some ice cubes in. Okay, and then we're going to shake the heck out of it. Now, one of the things that you're looking for when you're making cocktails is to have a balance. And I think that this verbena martini has a nice balance. It's a little bit of sweet, a little bit acidic from the vermouth. You taste the verbena, but it's not overpowering. Here you go. Have a sip.
All right.
Let me know what you think.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I think it was good. Find the recipe on our website and make it for yourself. EarthEats.org.
This is the weirdest looking watermelon I've ever seen in my life. It's like a dinosaur egg.
Kind of, yeah. This is actually from our farm down in Gibson County. And we grew some watermelons, and this one was shaped perfectly to do a whale. So I'm going to show you guys how to carve a little fruit bowl out of a watermelon. And then we've got some nice tequila and agave syrup to drizzle over the fresh fruit. So it'll be a fun morning today on Earth Eats. Okay, so I've drawn out a little whale on here, and you can also do swans and different things. But I'm just going to kind of go around the rounded part up here in the front and start cutting around for the head.
What's this tool that you're using?
This is just a little serrated knife. You could use a grapefruit knife if you wanted to. And then I'm going back towards the back of the melon and making a little swoop around there, and we're going to get started on the tail.
So this is for everybody out there, people who really like cake decorating or, you know, crafty things with food.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, chefs a lot of times do ice carvings and melon carvings and all kinds of things for buffets just to make them a little more special.
Were you big into carving pumpkins as a kid?
Oh, I love I still love carving pumpkins. So I'm just kind of making kind of a lip kind of look, and that will be the tail. And kind of looks like Mick Jagger's lips there. Okay, we're just going to go back around and open it up into a punch bowl kind of shape. And you can start seeing the whale take shape. And now we're going to start with the face. I've got the little blowhole here at the top. And we want this to be a happy whale, so we'll put a big smile on it.
Are we going to be using the meat of the watermelon?
Yeah, we're going to toss together whatever fruits you want, mix them together, and then we're going to pour that wonderful tequila lime syrup over the top. And to sweeten the syrup, we're going to use agave, which is also made from the same plant that tequila is made from, so it really kind of makes sense. All right, so we're just going to scoop out that nice red meat of the watermelon. And we want to cut it out so you can kind of look into the whale's eyes. And then we'll make that nice syrup. Okay, and the syrup is very, very simple. We're going to take a quarter cup of agave syrup, quarter cup of tequila, and we're going to squeeze the juice of a lime. And then just to kind of give it that margarita flavor, we're going to put a pinch of salt in it. And a lot of people like a little bit of salt on top of their melon, so
it just makes the flavors pop.
Right, you know, there's some classics like prosciutto with melon and other salty things with melon. Okay. And if you'd like, we could also put a little bit of lime zest. I'm going to let you have a taste of this.
Okay, here we go. That tastes like a margarita.
Right?
Spot on.
So we're going to spoon this over our fruit salad. And you can make this all ahead of time, wrap it with plastic, keep it in the fridge overnight, and it will just blow your guests away. They'll think it's really cute. It's a fun way to do it without doing a whole lot of work. And then you could do, you know, some waffles or other things alongside it, or have, you know, some nice cold champagne, and you're all set for the start of a good day.
See step-by-step photo instructions for how to carve this whale into the watermelon on our website. If you're already looking ahead to Halloween, check out our Pinterest page. We pinned a link for how to carve a brain out of a watermelon. Your kids will probably love that. Find all sorts of ways to connect with us through our website, eartheats.org.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. Bloomingfoods.coop. And Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Tom Barich, Aabon Binder, Matt Kohlglaser, Alicia Kropp, Chef Daniel Orr, Mia Partlow, Jana Wilson, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Thank you for tuning in this week. I'm Annie Corrigan. Cheers.